station number 13101, row 2.
Commander Ironside, Reel 2. I think you're saying that the Air Minister before the war used to visit Dowding 2.
Yes, he came along. He was a great publicity merchant. And stuff he came out of the front porch to greet him before he arrived, and found the whole area full of press men. So he ordered the whole lot out. And of course, there was no press when this fellow arrived.
Did the minister seem put out about him?
He didn't show it anyway. He was rather silly little fellow, I thought. Yeah, we had King Boris of Romania. Peter of Yugoslavia, they all came. Went to Odium, I think, for Boris.
Did Dowding regard all this visiting as a waste of his time?
I think so, yes. He was too keen to get on with his work, I think. But of course he couldn't say anything.
Did he manage to maintain a courteous exterior?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, I think he had to, really. You can't be rude to politicians, can you?
Not really. What were your own main problems in doing your job?
I didn't have many problems, actually. Lack of sleep, perhaps. When I was fairly fit, I could cope with that.
Did he keep you up all hours?
Yes, but quite often, by midnight or something, he'd say, all right, you'd better pack in, and he'd go on working. But he was always in at 9 o'clock in the morning, whatever time he stopped.
What time would he expect you to be on duty after a session up to midnight?
9 o'clock. No, I didn't mind.
Who else was working closely with Dowding at that time, alongside you?
Well, it was Keith Park. Howard Williams was the group captain ops. Charming Air Commodore, who was, oh God, what's his name? He was an electronics king. I've forgot his name now. Poor chap, with all that knowledge, he electrocuted himself on his mower after the war.
Now, you were at Fighter Command headquarters, I think, when war was declared. What do you remember about that day?
I remember Chamberlain's speech, followed almost immediately by the sirens going off, and a mad panic to go down to the ops room and see what the hell was going on. And then it all went quiet. It stayed quiet for a long time.
Were you with Dowding when Chamberlain's speech was listened to?
Yes, I think I had a radio in the office.
Did you see Dowding's reaction?
No. No, because he had a separate office anyway. He had a very palatial room.
Did Dowding race down to the shelter with you?
can't remember. Really can't remember. I would imagine he would have done.
Did you really think there was going to be a knockout blow attempt?
I think everybody thought that, yes. Possibly Dowding didn't. Because he had a lot more foresight than an awful lot of people, I think.
Did the long period of phony war take you by surprise?
Yes, I suppose it did, Brenda. I think everybody thought that if it wasn't going to start in the winter, because that's not the time when you can be successful in war, usually. We did expect it in the spring, and it came.
In fact, you left Headquarters Fighter Command in February.
Yeah.
Can you tell me how that came about, please?
Well, I'd been on at Staffy for some time to get a posting to a fighter squadron, and eventually he fixed it. He asked me which one I wanted to go to, and so on. I don't know why I chose 151, but there I was, in there as a flight commander with very little experience.
Was Dowding reluctant to let you go?
He didn't say so, but no. Just sort of wished me luck.
What kind of reception did you get on arrival at 151?
Oh, I think it was quite friendly.
Can you tell me about their equipment and personnel?
Yes. CO, as you probably know, was Teddy Donaldson. A real friendly chap. Good leader. Superb pilot. Quite the opposite of Stuffy, a real extrovert.
What kind of machines were they flying?
Mark I Hurricanes with wooden props. We had some with two-speed props, the Havilland ones, and then we re-equipped with the Rotols later on. That's a variable pitch prop, which were vastly superior. Ones with wooden props were the nicest ones to fly because they were a lot lighter.
What was it like flying the Hurricane, as far as you were concerned?
I enjoyed it. I'd never flown one before, but I didn't have any problems. It was a very, very nice aeroplane, very strong.
Did it have any vices, as far as you were concerned?
No. It was absolutely viceless, provided you treated it right. I think from the point of view of fighting, I would prefer it to a Spitfire because it was so much stronger. Certainly on the early Spits, if you put them into a very steep dive and pulled out too strong, the wings used to buckle. You could see the aluminium on the wings and little bumps. But you just couldn't bust a Hurricane, I don't think.
Did you actually fly a Spitfire?
Oh, later on I did, yes. But not operationally.
Were you the most inexperienced member of the squadron in February 1940?
Probably, yes. but one soon gained experience.
Who were the other pilots you particularly remember?
Oh, they're mostly dead now, I think. There's one, Dickie Milne might be alive. Dave Blomley died last year. I've been in communication with him. Teddy died, of course.
That's Donaldson.
Yeah. Jack Hamer, who was probably my best friend on the squadron, he was killed. Backley, everybody. Oh, well, no, there was. He was in 56, he was in the other squadron. A chap called Courtney, he died last year.
What was North Weald like as an airfield to operate from?
Grass, with quite a hill in the middle. But, I mean, you didn't expect long runways in those days. And we had a satellite, which is also grass, called Stapleford Abbots, I think it was called. We used to sometimes go over there for the night.
What was the satellite like? Was it inferior?
Oh, yes, it was just a hut, or a couple of huts, or something like that. Just in case North Weald got bombed.
Now, when the German attack came on the 10th of May 1940 in the Low Countries and France, what happened to the squadron then?
Well, we went. We were the last of the fighters that Stuffy had resisted so hard in sending to France. But we didn't stay in France, we went for the day. And we went, first of all, I don't remember the name of the airfield, it was near a place called Douai. The only maps we had, and I didn't have many of those, were Michelin road maps. And Teddy led us out on some objective, which we didn't really know what it was, and we never found it anyway. But we did find a whole heap of Junkers 87s practicing round a wood. And we got amongst those, and I think we shot down 7 of them, and a whole heap more damaged, which was highly successful for a first sortie.
Did you get any yourself?
No, I had a few bullet holes in my aeroplane, but I don't know, I was very cagey about claiming things. A lot of people were sort of far off mad and claim they'd damaged something. I didn't do that sort of thing. Now the next day.
Were the Stukas easy meat for a hurricane?
No, very easy, yes. Very easy, very slow. They only had one gun at the back. I think they had one at the front, but then they obviously weren't going to use that on a hurricane. The only trouble was, if they put their dive brakes down, you tend to overshoot.
Without looking up the date, do you remember offhand what day it was that you went to France when you met the Stukas?
If I could find my logbook, I could tell you, but I can't find it. It was right at the beginning of the invasion sometime.
Well, the invasion started on the 10th of May.
Yes, it was probably about the 17th or something like that, I think. And the next day we went, I think it was to Abbeville, which later became a big German fighter base.
When you attacked the Stukas, could you see the individual pilots?
Oh, well, you could see the air gunner, because That's where all the bullets in my aeroplane came from, because I was getting far too close and overshooting him. But the next day, I think it was Abbeville, we got clobbered on the ground. We were held there by, they call themselves BAFO, I think, British Air Forces Overseas or something, headquarters, saying they got a special job for us. And we could see the local town getting blasted to hell. Teddy kept on ringing up saying, can we go and get amongst them? No, no, special job for you. Next minute they came and bombed the airfield, hell. And we all jumped into a trench. And I think we had one rifle between us, which we shot at these things. Didn't do a lot of good.
Were they Stukas that were attacking you?
No. They were Dornier 17s, I think. Well, when all the mayhem was over, we took off. We were very fortunate because there were no trolley acts, you know, that's the sort of battery charging thing. It has batteries on it to start the aircraft. And starting on the aircraft's internal batteries is very hit and miss. But everybody managed to start, which was quite remarkable, and we got off and we did get amongst them. I got a 110, shot his tail off, and I was getting a bit short of fuel, couldn't find the airfield, so I headed towards the coast, and I saw a little landing ground with a windsock on it, and I landed there hoping I'd find something, and I did. I found an elderly Frenchman with a petrol pump, you know, like you see in a garage, with a winding handle. So I told him I wanted some fuel, and he said, where's the money? And I said, to hell with the money. You'll give me some fuel. And eventually he did. He got a huge funnel and put a chamois leather in it, and then pumped his fuel up, and about 2 gallons of water came up first, which he threw away, and then got some fuel. I took off and rejoined the squadron, and then we went home for the night. And that was the last time we went to France, because there wasn't much of France left.
Whereabouts was that, where you got the fuel?
It was a place called Berck-sur-Mer. B-E-R-C-K, I think they spell it, I'm not sure.
Do you think he ever got any money from the RAF for it?
I'm quite sure he didn't. I should think the Germans were there within a day or two, anyway. After that we did Dunkirk.
Can you tell me what your memories of Dunkirk are, please?
Oh God, I don't know. It was a very hard working time, I know that. We'd do 2 or 3 sorties a day.
From North Wales?
Yeah, we usually went to Manston, refueled at Manston, then and took off again.
What was the usual pattern of a Dunkirk?
Climb as high as you could, get tangled up with some 109s, and come back again if you were still alive. There was no missing Dunkirk. There was a huge pall of smoke all over it. The weather was usually extremely fine, which wasn't very nice because there were no clouds to hide in.
Did you have any success against the Messerschmitts?
Not a lot, no. They're usually above us and they come screaming down. One pass and they're gone. They're a lot quicker than we were.
Did you shoot any down?
I don't think so, no. Shot at a few. Whether I hit them or not, I don't know. It all gets pretty hectic.
Were you usually operating over the beaches or away from them?
No, pretty well over the beaches, yeah.
Because so many British soldiers always seem to beef about the RAF allegedly not being there.
Yeah, well, I could beef back. I was there every bloody day.
Did your squadron have many losses over Dunkirk?
Yes, we had quite a few. You know, the flight commander was shot down there. Can't remember the rest of his name. Ives. He was shot down. He landed on the beach and he called us up from the beach, and for some reason he could talk to North Weald. Probably there was a temperature inversion or something like that, and said he was coming back on a destroyer, which he did, but it got sunk and he was lost. He was a nice chap.
What could you see of what was happening on the beaches?
Well, you're fairly high up, you know, usually about 15,000-18,000. So you didn't see a lot. In any case, you weren't looking at the beach, you were looking up above, because that's where they came from.
Did you have a go at any of the German bombers at Dunkirk?
No, I don't think I ever saw a bomber there. Oh, mostly in 87 or so, but it was very difficult because they got so many 109s there that you didn't get a chance to get at the bombers. The Defiance came out with us for 2 days, I think. And they had a field day the first day because the Germans thought they were hurricanes and came up astern and got cloppered. They soon learnt them. After that, the Defiance were withdrawn from the battle.
So you went to Dunkirk for two or three sorties, did you say?
Two or three a day, I should think, yeah.
For how many days?
Well, as long as Dunkirk lasted. Was it about 10 days, wasn't it? I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
How tired did you get at that time?
Very tired, very tired. I can remember sleeping on the hangar floor in Manston on my parachute.
Do you think that affected your performance?
Well, possibly, I suppose it would. I suppose it would, I don't know. I doubt it, really, because I think when you're in a battle, the adrenaline's running so high that the tiredness is forgotten. You might make a mistake on landing, like forgetting to put the undercart down or something when it's all over, but I didn't do that.
Did you use drugs or alcohol to help you?
No.
Benzedrine?
No. I don't think those things were available. The alcohol was, but I don't think we drank a lot, actually, because they were usually too bloody tired and wanted to get to bed.
Was it allowed to have alcohol before you went up?
No, it was ordinary bar opening times. Nobody drank at lunchtime, so just the evenings. But then in the summertime, you were on readiness or standby or something, like the whole evening. So,
what happened to you after Dunkirk had finished?
Well, then we got in. It was, I think it was Stuffy's idea to show that the Air Force wasn't dead, was to fly these offensive patrols over France and Belgium. And we had a few engagements there. But not a lot of action, I don't think, because I think the Germans were then sort of consolidating.
Now, I know you got shot down on, or wounded on the 9th of July.
Mm-hmm.
Any incidents that happened to you before that?
Not that I can remember, no.
Can you take me through that day and tell me what your memories are of it?
Yeah, they're fairly clear in my mind, actually. Well, there were some other incidents. I remember we were patrolling I think it was a cruiser in the channel that was disabled, and every time we got near the thing, it fired off everything it got at us, which was very unfriendly.
You mean one of our cruisers?
Yeah. Yeah, another occasion when we were patrolling in the channel, there was a big tanker, I suppose it was part of a convoy, and we saw some Ju-88s approaching it. We went after them, but we were too late. They dropped a bomb right on this thing, and she just exploded. The flames went up about 10,000 feet, I should think. It's a terrible sight. I remember I got one bullet in my prop that day from the back end of an 88 that disappeared in the cloud, and we lost them.
So you're still operating from North Wales?
Yeah. Well, we used to disperse occasionally. We went to Tangmere on one occasion, and I was told to take my number two, was Jack Hamer, and we to go to Cherbourg and find out who was holding it. And I said, well, how do we do that? And the intelligence chap said, well, if they're Germans, they'll shoot at you. I said, yes, and so will the French. What the hell? And he said, oh, well, see what sort of helmets they've got. So we went off low level, getting lower and lower as we approached, and went over Cherbourg at 0 feet. Couldn't see any helmets at all. Nobody shot at us. I think the French had run, and the Germans hadn't got there.
Can you take me through the 9th of July now, please?